Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is On Target with Penny Wolfgang, a program that takes an inside look at what is happening in Western New York with news, features, and special guests. Now, here's your host, Penny Wolfgang.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to On Target, and thank you so much for joining us today. I'm your host, Penny Wolfgang, and every week we are here and we try to talk about subjects that we think are interesting and important and educational for all of us who live here in the Western New York community. And as you know, we also try to introduce you to people who are making a difference in our lives and who you might want to know more about and who have something that hopefully, and a lot of times, I hope, they would like to tell us or talk about or educate us about, sometimes entertain us. Well, you know, one of my favorite subjects, of course, is anything to do with law and order and the courts. I wonder why that is. How could you guess? But I do love anything to do with the cultural events, as you know, and activities. And we talk about worthwhile charities. Recently, we had somebody from the Empire State ride and for Roswell Park. So we do cover a wide range of subjects, but somehow I always revert to things related to the courts and law and order when I think it's topical. So recently, I attended a lecture, and it was on a very, very kind of unique subject in a way to do with the courts. It was about the issue of discrimination and bias and how it affects the legal profession. I thought that was, or legal business or legal things that happen in court. And I thought as I listened to it, well, you know, this applies, this issue of discrimination and bias, much of what the lecturer said applies to any business, any of us, whether we're in a teaching, a profession, whether we're in just working like in a plant or some company, a big company, a corporation. It spills over and it works in many ways to affect us in our daily lives. So, of course, as soon as I heard it, I ran right up to the lecturer, who happens to be a friend of mine and somebody I have had the pleasure of knowing for quite a while professionally. She is Lenora B. Foote, and she is an attorney. At the moment, she is an executive assistant to the Appellate Division, 4th Department. You may not know what that means, but it's very important because the Appellate Division, it's a higher court. And it reviews many, if not all, certainly all of the criminal convictions and felonies and many, many important issues that arise in the courts that are appealed. They go to the Appellate Division, 4th Department, which is our department in Rochester. And to work there, you have to be really smart and you have to be a really good attorney. And I know that, Lenora, because you are all of those things. Plus, in the old days, I used to, when I was a lawyer, did you know this? I worked for Legal Aid, the Legal Aid Bureau, and my job was, my position was head of the Appellate Division. So I spent many, many times arguing cases for convicted defendants. My name is in a lot of, in the law books, or now it's probably on the computer instead of law books, and a lot of losing cases. We lost a lot of cases. And the only thing I could say on my behalf was I had a different first name in a lot of them. It was before I changed my name legally to Penny. I'm not going to tell you what it is. And that way, even though I had the same last name, you'll probably find me. But that way I won't get too much blame. But the reason I'm saying all that is because it's hard. It's really difficult to be in the Appellate Division, and I really admire the fact that you can do that. And maybe we'll do a shout-out to Judge Whalen, who is our local
presiding
judge of the Appellate Division. He's really smart. And many of the people, judges, are from the Buffalo area. My friend Aaron, Perdotto. So here is Lenore. So tell me, let me just ask you a little bit about your background. How, before we talk about the bias and the discrimination aspect, how did you get to be where you are?
You know, thank you so much for having me on.
You're welcome.
I appreciate it. And you are an icon in the legal profession. So for when I got the call that you wanted me to be on the show, it's really an honor and a privilege to sit next to you and to talk about these issues. So thank you so much.
Thank you. I use that honor line a lot, too. I said, it's an honor to be, like when I was doing a television program for BBC Today, I said, it's an honor to be here. So we use that line a lot.
I do believe it, too. And I really respect the trail you blazed for so many women in the legal profession,
so
particularly
nice.
In
you.
Buffalo.
Thank you so much. And you can stay, and you can talk for 27 more minutes. So tell us about you, though.
Sure. So when I first finished law school, my major job out of law school was with the City of Buffalo, and I was the first Save Our Streets director, and it was a federally funded position, but the actual position was housed in City Hall. And so we worked with all different law enforcement agencies on the city, county, state, and federal levels to kind of eradicate drug activity on residential properties. And then we would turn those properties over to the Asset Forfeiture Department at the U.S. Attorney's Office, and then kind of get those properties off to families that were low income and needed it. So that was a wonderful start at the city. It taught me so much about the city and neighborhoods and communities. And then I went on to the Corporation Counsel's office for several years, served in various capacities, housing court, represented the Common Council, various boards, the Preservation Board, the Zoning Board, all types of things. And then I ultimately served as General Counsel for Buffalo Urban Renewal Agency, BURA, which is the development arm of the city. And from there, I spent 10 years as a support magistrate in family court, which gave me my first judicial experience. Outside of serving as a hearing officer in a small claims, which is also fun. We were talking about that earlier. But 10 years in family court was, I think, the foundation for me learning the judicial skills that I have now, and really learning about people and what they need, and how this issue, bias and discrimination, affects the people in our community. Because the court system is affected as well through this issue. And then for the last 3 years, I've been the executive assistant to the presiding justice. So that's been an amazing experience at the appellate division. And that's how I ended up here.
There's a little more to it, though, because I want to tell our listeners that you are speaking from experience, because here you're telling us what I think is like an outstanding career, and you're still young, so we have a lot more to go. And yet you had to have fought a lot of bias and discrimination to get where you are.
I think so. I believe that I recognized it as time went on. When I was younger, I don't think I knew what it was. But as I served in the legal profession, it quickly became apparent. And so by the time I got to this position, I've been afforded the opportunity to kind of dig deep and research the issue and present at lectures and programs to help people understand their biases and when potentially there is discrimination.
Do you feel that you faced it and overcame it in working your way up to this position, like starting back? I mean, you had to be one of the few minorities even in law school at that time, probably. And
I do feel
just guessing, but
yeah, but I feel that at UB Law, there was definitely an openness that maybe wouldn't have been other places. I had a great experience at Canisius College, but it was the first place that I recognized, you know, certain discriminations and bias issues. And so I think as I've worked my way up, I've been able to try to use my experience and the people I get to know to try to help bring awareness to this issue, because much of it is implicit bias. It's not something that's done explicitly. I think people don't necessarily realize that they're doing some of the things that they're doing, which causes for our communities and our court system to not necessarily look like the communities that we serve.
Well, Yeah, that's a good point, too, because you've been in, your whole career pretty much has been in the city of Buffalo, correct?
Yes.
Am I correct? And I didn't even know this, but are you native, born here?
Or? Born here. Yeah, I grew up in Williamsville, actually. But I've been in the Western New York area all my life. So I do know it pretty well. And one of the things that I learned when I was a city attorney was that the city of Buffalo and our area here is the fifth most segregated city in the entire country. And so when you look at that, you understand why sometimes people think a certain way about other groups of people. And understanding implicit bias and the difference between that and discrimination helps people try to change the way they think and the way that they approach perhaps hiring or getting to know other types of people and not being afraid to meet other people and to interact with people that don't necessarily look like you.
So I guess the first question, which I asked you actually when I was saying what should we call the program or what did we call your lecture, discrimination and bias, is like, what's the difference to, I think a lot of people, as I said it, I definitely did not, I can't think in my mind, I need you to explain to me what is the difference between discrimination and bias. They sort of sound the same.
So bias is more of an unconscious kind of reaction based on your past experiences with a certain group of people. And so you don't necessarily know that you're making a discriminatory type of decision or acting in a certain way toward a certain group. And it doesn't have to be, it can be either way. I think some people think that when we talk about implicit bias or discrimination, that we're always talking about white people against black people. But black people do the same thing. They have biases and discriminate against people who don't look like them. And so what I try to convey is that everyone needs to treat people as individuals and understanding that you might have an idea about a type of person because of what you've seen on the news or what you've heard your parents say over the years and things that, you know, when you hang out with the same type of people and you start to make fun of certain groups, then you kind of take that on with you as an adult. And you don't even realize that you're maybe making these types of judgment calls. So that's kind of the difference. When you discriminate, we kind of say during our lecture that that's something that you're doing and you're consciously doing. And it's almost the equivalent of as explicit bias. But when you have implicit bias, that's something that you're unconsciously doing and you don't realize it. So that's kind of the difference between the two, just being consciously aware of it.
And since you said the word conscious and as describing it, a lot of it, as you pointed out and as I think you're going to will explain to us, has to do with your mental processes, right? Your brain?
That's correct. So our brain uses two different systems. And system one is a very kind of unconscious reaction. And the best way that I can describe that is when you approach a red light, you know automatically that you have to apply the brake in the car. You don't sit and deliberate, like, what do I do now?
That's sort of automatic.
It's an automatic type of reaction because you see that red light. System two is a more deliberate type of thoughtful reaction to something. And the example that I use all the time is when you prepare your tax return, you are using your system two side of your brain. So you're not just, you know, kind of writing anything down. You have to think about it. You have to look at all the documents. And so, of course, it's pretty obvious when we're kind of making decisions based on implicit bias, you're using system one. And so people don't realize that maybe, I'll just use as an example, you see a person who's dressed in Muslim clothing and garb and headdress get on a plane. And people instantly become very nervous. And so why is that? Well, we think about the 9/11 attacks. But that person may sit down next to you and you end up having a wonderful conversation with them and you realize that you were all worried and you were making a judgment call about that individual without really understanding them as a person, but based on prior kind of experiences. And your brain remembers those prior experiences. And because we're all busy, you know, that's the bottom line. And so we don't have the time to think through every single decision. And so the brain automatically sends that picture of what we believe that person is going to be about. So it's difficult to try to interrupt the bias and interrupt your thought pattern unless you really consciously want to make sure you want to make a change.
You know what? This reminds me of two other words which probably are involved in what you're saying. One is profiling.
Yes.
I mean, in a way, when you were describing, yes, you see a person in Muslim garb coming to the plane, you automatically profile that person as a Muslim. Then your brain probably goes, oh, this person could be dangerous, this person could be, and then you associate it with 9/11 and on and on and
right.
on. So do they call that? I don't know if they do call it profiling.
Sure, it could be. And we all know that the FBI actually has a profile division, I think. And so it's some good things that you can do to try to profile if you're trying to maybe solve a case, but you want to make sure that you're not using certain attributes about a person and not really understanding why. The best thing that I always say is question why you believe what you believe. And if you can answer it with something that actually makes sense, then you're probably not being biased. You have a relevant reason, right, for why you believe what you believe. The media causes a lot of it.
Definitely.
You know, in our presentation, we use an example from Hurricane Katrina. And it's two different photos, and one is a young African-American man with dreads, and he has a plastic bag, and he's kind of pulling it in the floodwaters. And the caption from the Associated Press says that this young man is looting a store, is now stealing, you know, this food and trying to get through the waters. And then next to it is a white couple. And they have a bag, and they're pulling it through the water. And it says, you know, this couple found food and trying to get to dry land. So the difference was, how would you know that? You didn't talk to either one of them. You just had these photos.
You're jumping to the conclusion.
You're jumping to the conclusion. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
and
that's
so
a good example.
It's not the fault of individuals when they consistently see those images on the news. We all watch the news every day. And if you consistently see those types of images, you start to believe that young African-American boys are always stealing, that they're always committing a crime. So you automatically have a bias against them. And that affects whether or not you want to hire them, whether you want to admit them to a school, whether you want them living in your neighborhood and renting an apartment. It kind of just goes across the board for people to live a good life. And so we try to help people say, you know, sit down and really talk to people, get to know them before you start making any assumptions.
I'm just going to interrupt for a second, Lenore, in case you just tuned in. You're listening to On Target with your host, Penny Wolfgang, and we're having a discussion today with attorney Lenora B. Foote, the executive assistant for the Appellate Division in the Fourth Department, who is reviewing for us a lecture and a course almost that she has been given to try to eliminate in people's minds the idea of discrimination and bias and to explain how it affects us in our everyday lives. I guess I left out the legal part. Is there a reason why you chose? Is there more, or is it more prevalent or more apparent, the discrimination and bias in the legal profession?
Well, you know, there's a lot of reasons why the legal profession is kind of lagging behind other professions with respect to diversity. We are one of the lowest when it comes to a diverse group. The percentages are pretty bad. So we believe that implicit bias is just one of many factors, but we do notice that there is a bias against African Americans and people of color with respect to writing skills. And because writing is such an important piece of being a lawyer, it kind of holds people back sometimes from getting those positions that they dream to have. There is a study where they had given a memo that was written by the same student, but all they did was change the name. One name was very ethnic, the other name was clearly, you know, probably a Caucasian person. And they were, the partners that were given the memos were told, you know, this is an African American, and this one was a white student from NYU Law School. And so the results were that the exact same memo, just with changing the name only, was graded much more harshly for the African American student. And when they looked at the results, the partners that reviewed it couldn't believe it, you know, because they realized that even many of them from various backgrounds, many of them women, had graded this young man so much more harshly. And so why is that? And so basically the study showed that when you expect to find an error, when you expect to find a student that has, you know, maybe inferior writing skills, then you're going to find the errors and you're going to judge it much more harshly. So that affects students in law school. We all know that the best jobs, you need the best grades, and legal research and writing is one of the, you know, main topics that you've got to do very well. And so that's been affecting, you know, how students are able to progress through law school, ultimately pass the bar exam, and then get into some of the firms. It affects women, too. If you look at the numbers, you know, firms are hiring women, but they are not making equity partner. And often they're leaving. And so that's another issue. Like, why is that? You know, are they not feeling that the firm management is making them feel welcome? Are there biases against them when they want to go out on maternity leave and then don't get the great assignments that are really going to generate the best amount of work and equity for the firm? So all of these things come into play. And if we don't have more people on the bench, in the firms, you know, in government offices that can appreciate the differences between people, then we're going to continue to lag behind other professions with respect to diversity. And I believe we as lawyers should be at the forefront of this. We serve everyone. So if we don't look like the community we serve, you know, it really is kind of, it's really a sad issue.
I love the example that you gave of the writing from the two students, because I know that the student who graduated or went to NYU Law School is going to be far superior, because one of the two people in this room that's talking on this conversation is a graduate of NYU Law School.
Wow, I didn't know that.
I'm just teasing you, but I mean, everyone thinks that I went to University of Buffalo because I'm here, and so everyone did. Uh-huh. So I can't allow any stigma on my alma mater being.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. So I need, but seriously, what you said applies not only, as you pointed out, to bias against minorities, but to women also in many ways. And obviously not, as we said at the beginning, not just law schools, although it is important that to point it out, because lawyers are so, they're just so important in everyone's everyday lives that you don't want them to think of them as being biased or discriminatory in any way. However, when you mentioned the idea of women not only because they might be on maternity leave not doing as well,
right,
but making partner, but equity, that is an important aspect too, because you know that you've heard that, well, you're a woman and you don't need the same salary as a man, yes, because you'll have a husband to support,
right,
you, or a man to support you, and you won't be staying that long, and you'll be taking, you know, and these are all like bias and discriminatory and stereotype. We didn't mention that word before, but when I mentioned profiling, I said there were two words that came to my mind, and stereotyping is the other one. A lot of the things that you are trying to eliminate are the stereotyped ideas that people have.
Absolutely. And one of the stereotypes is that, you know, perhaps women or people of color don't enjoy playing golf. And we all know that in law firms, that's sometimes where you meet the right people, you meet the prospective clients, you know, that can bring in, you know, the money. And we know that's how business is done. A lot of times is right on the golf course. So when we have partners who go out and they only invite certain associates to come out and golf, it puts them, it gives them an advantage. And I don't think people realize it. So one of the things I always try to encourage people to do in their businesses is to invite everyone to various types of outings and have a variety of things that could attract people so that there's an inclusive environment. Because when we talk about diversity and the diversity at your business or firm, that's the actual numbers. Women, the actual people of color that work there. But when you talk about inclusion, that means you want to get that mix, okay, to work well together. So diversity is the mix. Inclusion is getting the mix to work well together. And if you don't have an inclusive environment, then that's where you don't see people really feeling welcome. And that's when you see people leaving. And so with respect to the law, we see people getting in the door, but they don't necessarily stay. And this conversation applies to the LGBTQ community as well. If people don't feel included, they don't want to stay at a particular work environment. And with corporations now telling law firms, you know, if you don't have a diverse group of attorneys working on my files, I'm going to take my business elsewhere. Because I think corporate America has kind of understood that you get the best ideas and you work a case best when you hear all different opinions and bring that all together. That's how you work a file, because I might not think of something, but you might based on your background, and I might think of something differently than you. And that's how you bring a case to fruition. Like, everything will work together. And so I think that, you know, corporations are putting pressure on these law firms to say, you know, if you don't have a diverse group working on my files, then I'm going to take my business elsewhere.
And that, I'm sure, will have more of an effect than any lectures or any instruction that, you know, because that's the bottom line.
That's the bottom line.
Of, as we said, money makes the world go round,
that's
or
right.
Whatever. And I'm glad you pointed out again to reiterate that this does apply to minorities, women, LGBT people, age too.
Age discrimination,
age
disabled, yeah. You know, anything that kind of doesn't fit into the normal little box. And because the legal profession has remained pretty traditional, you know, we
They're
still wear our suits and we're
yeah.
still, you know, there's
yeah.
with it being 2019, I see other professions being a little bit more flexible.
Advanced.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We still kind of are quote-unquote old school. Mm-hmm. And so in the process, I don't know if we've kind of come along with the times to appreciate that we make the legal profession better by being all different and coming from different backgrounds. I think that's the beauty of being able to work with different people.
Well, I'll tell you what, Lenora Foot, you make the legal profession a lot better, and we're really proud to have
you
as one of our members. And thank you for sharing all this information with us. It was really enlightening, and I'm sure our listeners enjoyed it too. Please join me again on Target next week, same time, same station, and have a good week, and goodbye, everybody.
You've been listening to On Target with Penny Wolfgang, a program that takes an inside look at Western New York and our community. If you have any comments or suggestions, please write to Penny Wolfgang at 500 Corporate Parkway, Suite 200, Amherst, New York, 14226.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.